homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So, today I'm talking about Zazen as sacred space. So by that I mean it is sacred space and it's making space for the sacred. I think about the fact that Orthodox Jews pray 3 times a day, devout Muslims pray 5 times a day. You know, even not very devout Christians often make, you know, like at least once or twice a week, they make that space for their, for what is sacred. And we do this aside from practical benefits. So in terms of our Zazen, you know, there are practical benefits in reducing stress or just kind of helping us feel more sane, helping us feel more compassionate, whatever, mindful in our everyday life. So we might do Zazen for those practical benefits, but in a way, when I was thinking about it, it's like, well, are the kind of these greater spiritual benefits or this making space for the sacred, isn't that kind of tied to the practical benefits? Maybe we experience the practical benefits because we're making space for the sacred. So I don't really think they're two different things. So what is sacred? You know, something worthy of reverence, something inspiring, something that in some way we see as more important than us. So that's why I got out the little tablets for us to just reflect for a little bit about, you know, what is sacred? You can start passing them out if you like. What is sacred to you? And I guess kind of if you want to or feel like it, just, you know, kind of why, what makes that thing, that being, that relationship, that experience, what makes that sacred? Or how would you describe the sacredness of it? From the bag when it comes by. Thank you. And what does it mean that these things are sacred to you? What does it imply? Anybody willing to share a little of something that you reflected on? Just get us into that sacred space.
I said, taking refuge in what arises regardless of my effort, but is never apart from my activity.
What is the, I guess, you know, what makes you describe that as sacred?
It's that act of surrender to something that's bigger than me. And yet not apart, like I said.
What is your definition of sacred?
I think it's pretty open. I mean, all I said, you know, the something worthy of reverence is kind of the standard definition, something we find worthy of reverence, worthy of respect.
I started brainstorming places that I thought of as sacred. So, altars, certainly, all kinds of altars, and my altar at home, the Japanese garden. And so I just thought, what are the characteristics of those? And they must be the places that I thought of collect blessings or gratitude. So there's a, so they hang out there because they happened there over time and they accumulate somehow. So my home altar it has a permanent space, and so I was really thinking of that as a place. It has a bench and a pad and an altar and a statue and a place. But it's like it stimulates or invites an attitude.
I think it doesn't have to be, I mean, the space is fine, the physical space, but it also involves people. You don't have to necessarily be by yourself, like this is sacred here in the Zendo. But then it's time to just, like Mark said, surrender and realize that whatever the mystery is working in our life that is there.
I think of it as a space that draws me in. It's heartfelt. It's beyond the discursive thinking that drops out. That doesn't. Maybe it's here. Maybe it's there. It doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost a state of mind.
I have something a little similar. Just anything that takes me to a place of stillness. And if I can, some anywhere you can sort of grab into that place and just go.
That was kind of playing around with the idea of sacred space. It reminded me of holding space. And that it gives one a place to grow into, which I guess is an aspect of holding space. And part of it was like the ebb and flow of life.
Would you look like you were going to talk a couple times? I'm not putting you, don't mean to put you on the spot.
I've wrote down quite a few things, and sort of the thing they all had in common was their ability to either make me a better person or help me realize that I already am the person I want to be.
I was pretty concrete. My relationship with my spouse and my family, animals, my teacher-student relationship with my teacher, the Dharma, the Buddha Dharma, the Sangha, and I guess what I recognized in them was it's like I'm going to make a priority. Give them priority in my life. Make sure that they have some space in terms of time and energy. And in part, there's a sense of like I need them. There's a kind of a sense of sense of dependency in a way on this kind of greater mysterious thing. Anything else? I'm loving this.
I'm into that as a place in my garden because it's a place I go to nurture life. And that seemed okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very elusive kind of like we know it when we encounter it. How you define it or what it's about is kind of hard to draw a boundary around. But and I was also reflecting how it seems like what feels sacred, whether it's a moment or a space or a relationship, it seems like the to me anyway, like the sacredness is often maybe by its very nature kind of subtle or fragile or easily missed. Like it would be easy to not make space for it, to be too busy for it, to ignore it or whatever, to let it get slide down the list of priorities. So there's something about it that kind of needs to be taken care of, which is why we kind of create altars, right? That just because otherwise we might just forget about it in the concerns of daily life. So when we sit, we're giving up all volitional activity except just sitting there. And in this case, of course, I'm talking about shikantaza. There are other forms of meditation. But to me, it feels more and more over time like just believe more and more what Dogen said, that Zazen, by that he means Shikantaza, themeless sitting, is not meditation practice. It's not a practice of trying to, you know, discipline the mind or cultivate particular qualities or anything. It's sitting, it's physically sitting upright and as still as we can, and then paying attention to simply being alive. Like giving up all other volitional activity, including trying to make our meditation some particular way, to make ourselves some particular way, to figure things out, to anything. And everything that happens as we're sitting there is part of being alive, no matter what happens. Like, it's impossible for anything to happen there that does not include it in simply being alive, even if we are bored out of our minds, or we're sleeping, or we're trying to achieve some kind of meditative state. I mean, that is, there we go. We're simply being alive. And thoughts arise. The mind generates thoughts the way that a gland generates hormones. It's just the thoughts come up and they go through our head. And it's actually no problem. It's no problem at all. They're simply part of our experience of being alive. If in the middle of a meditation retreat, you know, where even the worst of us at meditating, you know, after a few days, our mind slows down a little bit, if only because it's bored with all the stuff that it usually is preoccupied with. You know, there comes a point where you can kind of like, you can kind of see a thought from far off. Here it comes. Now I'm thinking about blah, blah, blah. And then it just kind of goes away. I mean, it, you just kind of, I guess it's, I often think of it as what we end up doing is kind of narrowing our attention down onto the thought. And then we don't really, we're not really aware of anything else, and we're caught up in the drama of the thought. Whereas if we're maintaining kind of a wide perspective, it's just the experience of being alive, then the thoughts kind of arise and fall within that, and they don't disturb anything. Now, our tendency, of course, is to start engaging in volitional mental activity. I mean, physically, at least, like we're just sitting there, right? But the mental activity, we're at least going to start planning or analyzing or fantasizing or worrying, or if nothing else, just entertaining ourselves, evaluating the past, rehearsing future conversations, whatever. I mean, a whole lot of the time that I spend on the meditation cushion and end up, I'm where my mind ends up going is like essentially writing blog posts about practice and meditation. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, and then I'm gonna, like, I'm describing it and like, you know, that's where my mind goes. You know, everybody, this is one of the things that happens over the course of meditation, is we learn where our mind goes. We learn the kinds of things that clearly we're, and this is just the nature of being human, of being alive. Some of you have heard me describe one of my favorite, so Uchiyama Roshi, who the book group I know has read his book, just his two, he has two metaphors for Zazen that I just use all the time. So this one is the timeline from Z to Z prime. So here's a, you know, here's Z to Z prime. Here's the little person sitting. Okay, and that's reality, right? The person's just sitting there, but that, you know, we'll have a thought, and then that thought will lead to another thought, and we kind of depart mentally from reality. And then Zazen is, you know, we just, you know, come back to reality, and then we depart again, and then we come back. And then also, like, we get kind of dreamy thoughts, and we go off into dreamland. Oh, okay, we kind of bring ourselves back to alertness. And he said the misunderstanding of meditation is that we're trying to stay on the DZ prime line and never fear from it. He said, that's only possible if you're dead. That's only possible if you're a rock. If you're not alive, that's not the nature of being alive. So he said the practice, Zazen, is not about that. It's about returning to that reality, even though we have a tendency to depart from it. Even though it is in our nature to, you know, go away from it, we just, you know, during our Zazen anyway, we just return to that reality. And to me, it's like that moment when we become aware that we've been caught up in thoughts again. That is the critical moment. What do we do then? That is where the crux of our Zazen practice is. What do we do? Do we react with some frustration? Do even the slightest kind of effort to fix that or judge that or something like, I'm going to, bring my mind back to the present moment. Even something that subtle is saying, thinking bad, not thinking good, I'm going to go back to not thinking, like, you know, already. So one of the metaphors for this as well is we are holding a bowl of water and we're trying to let it become very, very still. And then, you know, like the sediment sinks out and things become clear. And we cannot do anything to make that calm down except to hold still. If we go like, you know, oh no, it's you know, there's ruffles on the surface of the water, we're just going to make it worse. So that all we can do is just, so I feel like the less when we notice that and returning to reality implies even too much. We are already back. As soon as we are aware that we've been caught up in thoughts, nothing more needs to happen. So essentially, we notice we've been caught up in thoughts, do nothing. Nothing. Just embrace all of it as being alive. I mean, and this is where the deeper stillness comes from, is like, setting aside that whole struggle with ourselves. I, you know, my mind, I'm going to all my projects and I'm thinking about working against climate change and, you know, I got all these projects I've got to do. I got a website I got to finish tonight. And like, that's okay. That's who I am. That is what my life is like. So when I am sitting and I recognize that once again, I've gotten all caught up in my projects, that embrace of myself, that embrace of what happens, that embrace of reality, it's just, this is my life. And there's like this moment of just stillness and okayness, and I don't know, there's something that taste of the sacred there. What is going on here? Where it really doesn't matter where my mind goes or how still my meditation is or something. What am I doing here? So another Uchiyama metaphor that I love is his opening the hand of thought, right? So once we've grasped onto a thought, we've shrunken our attention down onto a thought, you know, as long as we don't hold on to it and put more energy into it, I just open that hand of thought and it'll go on. And there's a subtle way too that when we open that hand of thought, then we go, all right, what do I do now to prevent any more thoughts from from carrying me away. You know, and then there's a then there's an agenda and intention. We want to hold on to that nice moment of stillness. And this is really like that, ideally even letting that go. Just gratitude for this moment of waking up. That's why I have in that poem, like, throw away past and future, whatever. Okay, here we go. We have a nice moment of stillness. If I grasp it, it's gonna go away. So we just enjoy it for as long as it lasts, and it'll go away, and then the process will repeat. So in the space of Zazen, we are appreciating our lives just as they are. Unconditional appreciation, the kind we would feel as if this were our last day alive. I don't know if you can play that mental game with yourself. Sometimes I can and sometimes I can't. But really, like, if you really thought this was it, this was your last meditation period ever, I notice for myself, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, I mean, I'll meditate more deeply another day. You know, I'll be more engaged in this process, you know, just, you know, not today. Like, but if you really thought this was your last chance to meditate, I mean, like, oh, there's so much more that we have not experienced. What is this about? So setting aside our effort to improve, to figure out, each of us is terribly imperfect and limited. It's just my motto lately is, if you don't think you annoy people, they're just not telling you. That's, you know, I'm finding that a very useful mantra to carry around, because ordinarily I'm like, oh, that person, no, you're cutting me off in traffic and you're blah, blah, blah. But like, I have no, I'm by that very nature, right? I don't know what I'm not aware of doing. And we all have, I mean, even if you have great strengths, they come with weaknesses. So, but unless we've done something terrible, we need to take responsibility for or atone for, then it doesn't, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter. We're good enough. We are good enough. And over our life of practice, we may improve somewhat. I think we all have experienced that, you know, feeling a little bit more calm or compassionate or whatever. But that's not really, I mean, that's part of practice, but our appreciation for our life as it is not dependent on that improvement. So we have to practice really radical acceptance, embrace of, I mean, sometimes another mental game I play with myself is to imagine being embraced by someone that I really love and respect. You know, for me, that works. My mom would work. For some people, the mom doesn't work. Maybe a spouse, maybe a friend, whatever. Being embraced by somebody who you really trust and respect their opinion. And they are saying, you are fine. You are great. Don't worry about it. You are, you know, and that just like, so you can tell that they just think you're awesome. They know about your shortcomings, but they don't care. And just their encouragement that like, it's all okay. It's all right. And sometimes when I imagine that embrace, I also recognize the ways in which I'm not believing that most of the time, that I'm like, yeah, well, you know, I'll be okay once I fix that issue or once I stop being like that, then I'm okay. But like, could I really be okay right now? So what is this sacred thing, this experience we're making space for in Zazen? We all probably have different ways of describing it, but I think of it as the miracle and mystery of life itself. And this is why Zazen is just not just about letting go of volitional activity. It's also about paying attention to simply being alive. So there's like this letting go and not doing, but we're also supposed to be like alert and energized and curious. And one of the words that Zen teachers have used is taught. Our T-A-U-T, our zazen should be not tense, but like almost like we're excited. And I mean, obviously that's tricky, you know, that's just as tricky as letting go of volitional activity. It's tricky to maintain that kind of attention and energy because naturally we're very interested when, you know, we have an agenda or something's going on or we're going to get something out of it or we're in danger or whatever, then, you know, there's plenty of attention naturally. But now we're not doing anything, letting go of trying to do anything. We're not even trying to make our meditation any particular way. Like, what are we supposed to be paying attention to? You know, so we encounter many obstacles in Zazen, but they are not, I think much of the time, they're not the obstacles we think they are. So we might think, I'm not very good at concentrating, or I'm not very good at staying awake or alert, or I'm whatever. But I see those are just symptoms of deeper obstacles. And those deeper things that we need to work on if we want to truly sit Zazen, it's radical acceptance of ourselves, radical acceptance of life, trust, faith in ourselves, faith in this practice, letting go of what we want life to be and opening up to how it is, acceptance of dukkha, that nagging sense that things aren't quite the way that they should be, that feeling that except for brief lovely moments will be with us forever, that is just the state, that's just our human state. Willingness to let go of our ideas about ourselves and the world, although I often call that our mental map, and willing to let go of the mental map and see what happens, because otherwise we're not really seeing and experiencing life as it is. A simplicity of heart, a willingness to just appreciate the simple. And sometimes if we have longings for things to either change or longing for things that we don't have, it can be very difficult as we try to just settle and be satisfied with what we have and what we are. You know, our mind will go, but, you know. So I guess I see all of this as, I don't know, it's we work on our Zazen, and it helps us with these things, but to some extent we can also work on these things and it helps our Zazen. So yeah, I guess I will leave it there. Comments or questions? Does it make sense? Do you resonate with the idea of Zazen as sacred space or as making space for the sacred?
Yeah. I wrote, for what is sacred is the connection between and among all life forms, all sentient beings and all life. And the place where I access that or have an opportunity to notice that is just being still, sitting. And so, yeah. Huh. And, you know, just being in nature, just being quiet, just being aware of that it's all happening.
And it's such a, I don't know, it's an indescribable mystery. And when we when we're really still and we can let go of our mental map of the world and we see, like, you know, it's all the same life, you know? It's all, like, life with a capital L in a way that just manifests in all these different ways, but... And it's such a miracle and mystery. And our own experience of it, our own... Because we are... we say our true self-nature is no self-nature, but we still aren't talking about self-nature. Like, what is that? We are an individual. We are by individual, you know, it's like an independent, separate little parcel of life. What is the nature of being that? And, you know, recognizing in what sense we are an individual and it's all just life. and our actual lived experience of that is so amazing. That's what, you know, when my zazen is alert, and there's an aspect of curiosity about that, recognizing, you know, after 25 years, I have, you know, this much of a experience and understanding of that. There's so much more.
Yeah. So I jot down a lot of words. Summarize my awareness of the sacred being direct experience of a universal, pervasive, animating energy, force, spirit, presence. A lot of words.
Nice. But I like it because it has all of those aspects. Yeah.
I like the word taunt because actually that kind of tension is where peace begins. Mm. Peace is not the opposite of war, and peace, of course, I think starts in the heart. I hope the Indians say, we have the treasure buried within us. We just don't recognize it or trust it.
So I think looking at zazen this way can perhaps help us, I don't know, prioritize it in our lives, making space for it. You know, if we think of it more of a utilitarian way, we might be kind of like, well, whatever, you know, don't really have time to meditate today or this week or whatever. If it's, I'm feeling okay, so I don't really need to meditate, but this kind of reminder that this is about making space on a regular basis for something that we often forget, and it's only within that space that we remember. And we don't want to be walking around our lives in a state of forgetfulness about this. This is why I want to explore more about this, but we had a Muslim speaker a ways back, and he talked about how they describe the human condition as forgetfulness. That we are in a state of forgetfulness. And so the spiritual practice is about, you know, breaking ourselves out of that, which is why there's the many times of prayer each day. You put aside everything and you make space for what is most important. And there's also the aspect of our physical, mental, and emotional engagement in zazen. So, in a sense, it's great if we can be engaged in all of those ways we're physically sitting still and upright. Our mind is, we're opening the hand of thought very diligently, whenever we see that we're caught up. And, but also an emotional aspect of it, which some of this, idea of the sacred gets to, why are we doing this? Because we want to be awake to this mystery of being alive. Also, sometimes in more practical ways as well, you might say, because I have all these projects going on, I will try to remind myself that if I take this space, and I really, the more that I can put those projects aside, the better I will be able to do them. So in a way, make this space for the sacred, to kind of ulterior motive, I guess, so I'll be more effective at the stuff that I'm going to do. But it's a kind of, a little, helps me get more emotionally engaged in the process, because I'm doing my projects because I care about people and about the world. So I'm kind of shifting that care. Well, if you really care about the people in the world, then you will make this space. So anyway, there's those different levels of engagement, but I think it's valuable to keep in mind that even if we're only doing it physically, and the mental and the emotional, not so much, I think that's still very powerful. I don't know. If I had to guess, if it was possible to break it down as to where the benefits of Zazen come from, I would probably say 75% of it comes from just physically sitting there. Just physically engaging in that process. Physically, literally making some time and space in your life to put everything down. But of course we're really involved with our minds and our emotions, so we think that's really important for us to be really engaged, and it is. It's, it's wonderful, it's valuable, but no.
I never understood that. You could be sitting anywhere, anytime. Maybe you sit in front of the water and it makes it a little bit different.
Yeah.
It's what you do when you sit that's more important.
Well, I mean, there's something deep. I mean, because our self is not how we think it is. It's, as modern psychology is showing, our conscious level, that's just a narrative we're creating to explain what's going on. That's not even really where the action is. So to physically, I don't know if any of you have done this before. You've been in some situation, you're in a waiting room or you're in an airport or you're, visiting family or something. You think, I think I'm going to spend a few moments meditating. And if you just kind of sit in a chair and you go okay, I mean, not so much. But if you physically sit upright and you put your hands in that meditation posture and then you are determined to sit still, it's very different. And if you do that in a airport waiting room, people will notice. You will look weird. It's physically a very different thing. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it's not 75%, but lately I've been thinking about that when I bow, and I suppose maybe mental and emotional engagement in that bow is valuable, but it doesn't even feel like it. It feels more important that I just physically bow and pay attention to it as I do it. To just, that is instructing me in a way that mental and emotional, if I'm oh yes, the Dharma is so great and I am remembering to respect the Dharma, or I'm, I love the Buddha, or, but that none of that has to be there, it feels like, for that bow to be effective. That just being open to that physical experience is what really matters. Yeah.
I probably have said something like this before, but when I walk out at the wildlife refuge, at the end of my walk, I go behind the visitor center and I look out at this panorama that's there of whatever birds and creatures and grass and water and the air and color in the sky exists at that moment. And I bow. And if I'm aware of what's happening in the sense that I'm a part of this panorama, I'm also seeing and listening and feeling whatever is going on, then there's some part of me in some sense that becomes a part of that, which is out there and in here.
That's good.
So, in some ways, I feel like I've been asking this question in one form or another for years, but
it's usually how it is.
There's this thing called the paradox of tolerance, right? It says that the one thing that a tolerant society can't tolerate is intolerance. And I feel like there's a way that that's also Zazen, because when Zazen is sacred space and everything that arises inside of Zazen is sacred, one of the things that can arise in Zazen is a sense that things need to be better than this, right? This aspiration.
Yeah.
It feels very human and very sweet, but it's also kind of the end of Zazen. Can you say anything about the relationship there?
I don't know. It just feels like... I don't know. It just feels like that can be so completely embraced that it is part of Zazen. That it's... You know, it does really feel like, oh, isn't that nice? You know, of course you want to improve. I mean, I think this is maybe where the Vajrayana school, you know, they have a really strong emphasis on how everything is a manifestation of enlightened mind, which is like, well, how could that be? I mean, how could like anger or jealousy or what, you know, self-centeredness, how could that be? But if we look at like at a very basic level, everything that occurs to us is our being trying to take care of us. It's trying to keep us safe. It's trying to make us happy. So it's like it's all coming from the right place. I don't know. Even our negative thoughts are usually come at the core, you know, there's some fear or concern. Well, thank you for a lovely discussion. I will formally close the Dharma talk. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.